Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Just a quick warning, you're going to hear a lot of those words on the show, so you might want to get the kids out of the room.
No kids in the room during this, please.
Well, you silly geese, another episode of UFC Unfiltered with me and Matt Serra. This is Jim Norton. We have a great episode. We had Eddie Alvarez and Joanna Jędrzejczyk called in, and both were great. And I didn't fuck her name up, which was miraculous. I just did kind of, but it's because I'm so amped for having gotten it right. Joanna Jędrzejczyk, I said it right. Now watch me fuck up.
Say it again.
Eddie Alvarez. I can't get his name.
He may finish it here. He's out.
UFC and Digital Media present UFC Unfiltered with Jim Norton and Matt Serra, powered by Digital Media. Find your voice. And now, your hosts, Jim Norton and Matt Serra.
Nice to be back in New York. It was really weird. It was a weird couple of days in Vegas broadcasting. I enjoyed it. Matt and me had a good time.
We had a really, we bonded, I feel.
Yeah, really fun, man.
We really did. We hung out together, went to fights together, we worked out together.
We ate together.
I had a good time.
But it's weird to broadcast in another studio. We got used to this, and then having to go into these other circumstances, and then the live one, which was a bit of a clusterfuck, just because it was our first out-of-the-studio event.
Well, I mean, Bruce Buffer was supposed to be on, and he hurt his leg, yeah. And then that big debacle with Jon Jones.
Yeah,
I just made the poor producer had to leave the room because I need a fucking stirrer for my coffee.
We should lock the door. That's what you do. Good. Fuck him.
Let's lock him out.
Get out.
Get out of here, Chris. But
that's called throwing your weight around. By the way, where's the producer? He's getting me a napkin.
He's getting me a fucking napkin. But no, I had a really good time, man. I had a really good time.
Did you? Here's something I learned about Matt. Matt Serra is such a nice person.
Oh, look at that.
We're on the plane coming home. And we're sitting there, and there's a guy and his kid behind me, and in the row behind me that Matt is in on the other side of the plane, there's a young blonde gentleman sitting in, and I say gentleman,
he's a little sissy.
Well, I had to look twice to make sure I wasn't sure, to be honest.
Yeah, he's very feminine,
and he was talking to the dad next to he, and he said something to the people behind me. He goes, I like my own. I was supposed to be. I don't like the window. I like the aisle.
Yeah, but he said it in a very, very.
But very before you even were sitting.
Voice. Oh, he said that.
Yes.
Then? Oh,
he said before said, I so got I knew there was some weird issue. I guess the father and the son had taken his seat so they could sit together. The kid was, 10. So Matt comes in and sits in the.
My seat. My seat which was the aisle seat.
And the other person who looked like. I don't know who he looked like. He looked like one of the fucking. What were the vampires in that?
The Lost Boys.
He looked like a Lost Boys vampire.
He did. He's like Corey. Yeah, like a Corey Haynes.
A creepy, sickly, like, would it be gay if I fucked this guy vampire? Kind of cute.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
So Matt is sitting there, and the kid walks by Matt to get out.
And this is the red eye. I mean, this is the red eye. Tired, man. Yes. And I like the aisle because, much like you, we both have... little girl bladders.
Yeah.
We have to, or little old lady bladders.
Where bird,
we have
bladders.
Bird bladders. Bird bladders. Yeah. Where we always have to take a piss. So I like the aisle seat because I don't want to have to climb over anybody or freaking wake anybody up. But that was a problem because, go ahead.
Well, the guy gets out and crosses over Matt and he goes, I was supposed to be sitting in the aisle.
And he said it like a real, like little diva, like a little. Well, not diva. How was it? Well, like very
like
feminine.
A little bitch. Like, she's an asshole.
I. That's no. And he said this is not the seat I'm supposed to have.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I looked at, so I didn't know what he meant. I didn't know what was going on. So I looked at my my ticket and I'm like 4C. I go, this is my seat. What is, so then that's not a stewardess. You don't call them stewardesses. The flight attendant. Yeah. The fuck stewardess. She came over. She was very nice, you know, and she asked me if I minded the window seat because the guy was going to take the father away from the son. He was going to separate the kid from his father because he wanted the aisle seat.
Yeah, Matt, this is why Matt's a nice guy. Because when that guy went to the bathroom and Matt was sitting there, I'm like, I'm trying to stir shit up. I'm like, man, the guy was complaining. Because I'm hoping when he comes back, Matt chokes him to death.
No.
I was literally hoping, as much as I like you, I was hoping you'd grab him by his neck and then forcefully like lift his neck up. And like Michael Myers did that in one of the Halloweens where he broke somebody's neck on the ceiling. I wanted you to grab his fucking awful chicken neck and just fucking... I wanted you to kill him the way they smothered that chicken in mash. It was a baby! So Matt is the fucking nicest guy. The guy's like, that's supposed to be my seat. And Matt's like, okay, buddy, I'm over here! And Matt just sits there in the window like a night, and I'm watching this going, Matt, Sarah, is just a really nice person.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? I have kids, too, and I've seen... where they got to separate, like, for whatever reason, like, the kid can't sit next to the parent, and that would be horrible, man. Sure. I don't know who, I never, that's why I always tell my wife, like, I seen, on planes when they have to, I don't know the reasoning, I think it's because in case something happens, they have to have either, if the kid's too young, like, have to sit, like, it has to be where... it can't be one parent with like two kids, something like that. Do you know what I mean? Like with I seen the where they make a stink about it, and the pilot would come out and walk up to the parents and go, "Your child will die if you don't. You know, he could die. Or your baby could die if you don't do this." So I was so very blunt that it's very disturbing. So whatever. Anyway, I don't know what the hell that has to do with anything. But anyway, I don't like the. I'm a parent, so I don't want the Brazilian guy and his kid.
Yeah,
and I'm like, nah, I don't, you know, it was either me moving or else that guy would have to get separated because this guy was being a little bitch.
But Matt was so nice about it. I'm watching this and just going, what a nice guy he is.
Thanks, buddy.
And Matt's a true tough guy, by the way. That's how a true tough guy acts. Like me, I'm a little I'm a weaselly man. I have fucking Sandy Duncan wrists. I'm hurting nobody. So the fact that Matt's just a bull of a man and just a nice, pleasant person with nothing to prove. And the guy thanks Matt. And Matt, he just couldn't have been nicer about it. You were much nicer than I would have been in that situation.
I'm nicer than you thought I was.
I always knew you were nice.
Thanks.
But that was an annoying situation where you could have been. And then Matt goes to the guy, because Matt's traveled. Matt goes to the guy, hey, what's the accent? Where are you from? Like, just trying to bond because you've been to Brazil. And the guy's probably like,
oh, he didn't want nothing to do with me.
No, he's probably like, why is he asking you this?
It's crazy. Was just like, you know, he thanked me, the father. And then he kind of, I think he pretended like he didn't speak English. Just I'm like, all right, just trying to make a friend. I was too jovial. I don't know why I was so happy.
Well, you didn't sleep any better than I did. That's the thing. He's also wide awake on the plane.
No, and you know what? I didn't take my little nap during the, I was like, I had some time to kill. Like, you know what? Let me stay awake. That way I could fall asleep on that plane, but no, that didn't work, man. That little sissy ruined it for me.
Yeah, but here's the thing with the plane. We were lucky enough to fly first class. And I don't say that with arrogance, although I do actually carry a little, I'll confess, I carry a little curtain with me that I hold on a stick. So I put it on my right when the animals are walking through the coach. I hold up a curtain so they can't look at me. And I'll part it once in a while. I'll go, boo, fucking beat it. And I let the curtain close. But these were these old school seats. These were these old seats. Like, you know, even seats in coach have it, where they have like the little wing tips that you can go like... and they tilt out and you can just rest your head. It's uncomfortable. It's a quarter inch piece of cardboard, but at least you can put your head on it. These didn't have that. So it's just like a big wide seat back. So your head's like an infant head just kind of lolling all over this big dumb seat. It was really uncomfortable.
And you know what I hated, which I know I'm acting like we're acting all spoiled now, but I hate when they don't have, I like to have like a remote control. Like when you're like, basically you flick through the channels and get a movie or whatever. I don't like when there's this one movie that you have to watch. They had the Jungle Book on, which yeah, I took my kids to see that. That's great, but... Really? Flight coming back to Vegas? You're playing the Jungle Book? And I know we all have to see. I mean, there's no choices. I don't want to, listen, I don't want to complain, but that sucks, man. It was an older plane, so they don't have the JetBlue, like, things in the seats.
Well, before we had said, before we had gotten on the plane, Matt was saying to me, I hate when it's one fucking monitor
and?
Hanging. And this is me, you know, fucking me, Mrs. Codependent wife that I am. I'm like, oh, there's going to be a bunch of them to watch what you like. Because I didn't think any more play. This is the one where you walk out of the bathroom, it's just hanging. I have to plug something before you. I'm doing a bunch of gigs.
Oh.
I'm prostituting. I keep forgetting to plug my gigs.
Yeah.
So next week, the 21st, I'm going to be in Columbus, Ohio, in a theater there. Go to jimnorton.com to get tickets. And I have dates in Minneapolis and Pittsburgh and Toronto. So if you want to see me live, do my stand-up shit, come watch. And I'm gearing up to shoot something. Now, we have to go to the phones.
Get out of here.
I have been... yammering about wanting our next guest on the phone, and I was asking for him before he was a lightweight champion. In fairness, I'm not jumping on the lightweight championship bandwagon shit. I've been saying I wanted him long before that. So let's say hello to Eddie Alvarez. Eddie, how are you, man? You're on with Jim and Matt.
What's up, Eddie?
Awesome. What's up, Matt?
What's up, champ?
What's up, Jim?
How you doing, buddy? Congratulations, man. How you are? You? I hope you. I mean, obviously, you're feeling good.
Yeah, yeah, I'm good. I'm gonna get my foot checked though. My foot's a little dinged up, but other than that, I think I'm feeling pretty damn good, man. Had a good weekend.
What did you do right after you won? I always ask somebody. I mean, what was the first thing you did after you left?
Well, they put me through the ringer. I had to do like a photo shoot, and then like all this other media. I didn't really get to do anything for like about an hour or two. And then first thing I went to MGM Grand. And went up to the hotel room with my wife, and my brother was up there, and a couple friends, and we just kind of celebrated the MGM.
Now, Eddie, my man, now, the way that first round went, which was phenomenal, the fight, listen, what a freaking amazing fight. We just said it, but I'm going to say it again. It was so exciting, man. I was out of my seat. I picked you to win, but, you know, I thought it was going
to
be...
You picked me to win?
I did. Listen, go back and listen to the episode. I'm not bullshitting. And actually, when I got to Vegas, I was on the shuttle going to the baggage claim with a bunch of guys that were in high school with you. And I saw the shirt and I told them, I go, yeah, I'm picking Eddie. And they go, yeah, you're just saying that because you're in front of us. I go, no, motherfucker. Why the fuck? What am I trying to impress you guys? But then I saw a bunch of your friends. But I did pick you to win. I'm not going to point out that Jimmy didn't. I'm not going to say that.
No, but first of all, Eddie, here's why you won. Because I didn't pick you. I stink at picking. But the only reason I thought that he was going to win is because he's so good with his legs, and Cerrone seemed to give you a hard time with his legs. That was the only reason I could think of that you would have a hard time with Dos Anjos.
I agree. We addressed that, though. I mean, it was something that we were aware of in the Cerrone fight, and something for sure that we knew they were going to try to attack or exploit. So, I'm not a super brain. Mark Henry is. And one thing that you got to know going into every fight with that guy, that there won't be one stone unturned. This guy is like a stickler for detail. So I just feel safe with him on my side knowing that.
Oh, 100%.
He's paranoid enough for the both of us. So
yeah, Mark Henry, you know, you hear about all these teams and the coaches and stuff, but Mark Henry, from his work with Frankie Edgar, his work with you, his work with Barboza, I mean, he is just a phenomenal coach, not to mention a great, great man. I love Mark, man. I always love seeing him. And, of course, Ricardo Almeida is like my brother. So I love your whole team. And you got a good group around you, man.
Yeah, I think the last 6 months or 8 months that I've been back, it's been night and day. Like, the improvement, I can feel myself doing things differently. And at first, when Mark had me move in certain ways, I was so used to these mistakes that it felt weird doing it right.
Yeah.
So I'm like, Marcus, don't feel right, but I just realized that it don't feel right because I've been doing it wrong the whole time.
So. That's how I feel when I fuck.
Yo, Eddie.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, little pervert.
I feel like dynamite.
Yo, Eddie, man. Like when I predicted you to win, like I kind of thought it was going to resemble that. A little bit what you did with Pettis, how you put pressure on him. You had to, get the blood going into his arms and stuff by putting him up against the cage and putting him down. And then, going back to the striking, mixing it up with a bunch through the strikes and a lot of the making him work to fight off your takedowns and stuff. I thought that was going to be kind of the game plan. But I always knew you had power in the hands where if he's worried about the takedown, that you could start lighting him up. It was the game plan to try to work him, because I know you went for that first shot, and when you went for that first shot, he got your neck, and you had that scramble. I remember thinking, "Oh fuck, man, this is gonna be a battle because he took that away." What was the game plan now that it's over?
Yeah, I mean the intention at all was not to. I mean, I think he was concerned about the wrestling.
Yes,
and I thought to me that was a good thing. Because I'm like, his mind's on the wrestling, and that's not where me and Mark Henry were at. We were totally about exploiting his stand-up, and then, of course, mixing it up, making him think about the wrestling, making him think about my kicks. I feel like right now, where this sport's at, like you can't use one thing. You can't say, I'm going to beat a guy by striking, or I'm going to beat a guy by wrestling. You're a dead man if that's the game plan you're going in with, so... I think it's just important is to keep him guessing, period. But the minute they think that I'm going to wrestle the whole time, I'm going to become a striker. Or the minute they think I'm a striker, I'm going to become a wrestler. So, like, I'm not like these other guys who've been around for 3 years. I'm well-versed in everything. I have good jiu-jitsu, have good kicks, good stand-up, and I can use it all against the best guys in the world. So I'm going to use it. I'm not going to just do one thing.
What I was really impressed with was when you had him hurt and you knew he was hurt. So you stayed on him. You smelled blood. And then when you did that jumping knee up against the cage and he ended up cross-eyed, and he's got very good jiu-jitsu, there was a time where you knew enough not to let him off the hook. And he ended up total cross-eyed on you. And you scrambled back up because he still had the cobwebs in his head. So you knew that enough where you could have just chilled and defended yourself and rode that out because, you already hurt him bad. But you knew to get out, get up, and finish that fight. And you had to exert some energy just to get out from underneath, to get up. And what was going through your head there that you knew he was still on wobbly legs, even though he was cross-eyed on you? Like, you knew he was still struggling?
That knee is something that his camp does. We trained to defend that knee. So, like, whenever Rafael Cordera and their guys get a guy hurt or have a guy flush against the cage,
yeah,
they relax and then they throw this massive switch knee. So I seen their teammate do it two fights before I went out. So as I was warming up, I seen their teammate knock a guy out with it. And then right away in my corner, Anderson, Frank, and Mark went, "Hey, man, there it is right there. That's what we're talking about." So I'm like, "Yeah, I can't get hit with that one." So when I went out there and he was hurt and he was against the cage, I had like a flash. I just thought, "Hey, man, I could do it too."
That's great.
I went for it. I wasn't as good at it as they are. I fell on my back and the first thought was that was a terrible idea.
Yeah.
But then he was still a little beat up, and it was an easy get up. Because he still had some cobwebs, and then I just thought a guy as durable as him, and a guy as experienced as him, if you manage to get him hurt in that 25-minute window, you got to go in on him because 100%. That could never happen again.
100%.
Yeah, it was really.
You know, Matt, George St. Pierre.
Sure.
Bro, when you heard a guy like that who barely makes mistakes, you gotta finish.
And it's funny because it's always more dramatic for the fight. You know what I mean? Just like with Bisping and Rockhold, like when you got him hurt, I was out of my seat. Then And then you got back up and you knew, like, he's not letting him off the hook. Is he going to land that shot? And then you land this series of shots and it just makes it that more dramatic. You know what I mean? I'm sure you know. I'm sure you watched the fight 500-600 times already. Do you watch a lot of a victory like that? Let me ask you. You're a champion already many times over, different organizations. And now that you're the champion of the UFC, does it feel different? Does it feel different to you to be the champion of the world in UFC compared to other organizations?
Yeah. I mean, it's the mecca. It's the Super Bowl of everything, man.
100%.
I guess it's surreal.
And do you watch your fights? That was a good question, because I'm wondering if you guys, you'll do it if you have to learn something, but will you go back and just watch a win that felt good?
I watch it over and over. I watch it over and over and over and over.
You should. It's your work. You got to, dude.
How about a loss?
I've been waiting since I've been in UFC. I've been waiting for a performance like that for God knows how long.
Will you watch a loss like that too to learn from it? Or is it one of those like one and done? Like maybe you'll watch it once and you can't see it again.
I watch my losses twice as much.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, they anger me and I shut them off in between, but it definitely drills home when I get a loss to, I obsess about it to the point where I don't want to do it again for a long, long time.
That's why you're going to hold on to your belt. I don't watch my fucking losses. I watch once, I'm depressed, and I don't watch it. I go, okay, I did that wrong, and let me just fucking erase this from my memory.
I dwell on it. I dwell on it and let it fester until so it never happens again.
That's the right thing to do.
Hey, did you get a chance to see Will Brooks fight Ross Pearson?
I didn't. I seen him at the MGM. I heard a guy say, Eddie, and I just turned around and kind of, I was like, hey, what's up, man? And then the guy I was with said, that was Will Brooks. And I'm like, oh, I was kind of rude, you know what I mean? So I turned around, I went back to him, I said, hey, man, good luck. Good luck with everything. Congrats, and go out there and do your thing. And he did well.
Yeah, but did you, he told you, he kind of in the ring, he said, hold on to that belt for a little bit. You got away from me in the other organization. I'm here now, and I want to take that.
I'm not sweating Will Brooks. There's a lot of really tough guys in this division. He has to, you know, still fight guys of the higher caliber and see where he's at. I'm not worried about him right now.
Okay, so you're saying basically Will Brooks just kind of said that and it's not going to have any impact on what happens?
Nah.
Okay. Who do you think is next to fight you? Do you have any thoughts on that? I mean, Nate Diaz has been speculated, Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, ideally I would like the winner, Connor and Nate. That'd be awesome. I'm waiting on that. A lot of people are on Twitter and a lot of people are online talking about that one. You know, that'd be an amazing fight. I heard George is one at 155 and he's been an idol of mine for years. So that would be an amazing fight. I don't know if that could ever happen, but I'm just dreaming. I'm hoping something pops up on my desk that I can sign.
Would you want to fight Connor next if he got past Nate, or would you want to fight somebody else first?
Nah, for sure. The winner of that next. Would love that.
But do you think that he would do that? Or because he has to fight, I guess, Jose Aldo again. Is he going to, you think he's going to stop off at lightweight on the way down?
I don't know. Who knows, right? He's fighting welterweight. I mean, nobody ever thought that would happen. And then, he hasn't defended the featherweight belt. I think he's just kind of keeping that so he still has a story to run to if he loses again. He loses a story. So I think he creates in fighting, like if you can't win at one weight class but you're able to go to another one, then you still have your story. You're still alive. It's like lives. So if he bumps up to welterweight, he still has a life at 55 and a life at 45 until he gets beat there. So he's just he's playing a risk-free game at welterweight because he still has two other stories to go.
That's really smart. You know, I didn't even think of that. That's like playing three hands of poker at the table at the same time. That's a really smart way to look at it. It's because now he has another guaranteed fight, even if he doesn't do well on this one.
And it leaves you room for an excuse because, oh, I fought 45. It's a very intelligent way to fight. It's a risk-free way to fight, and nothing a fan will ever see, but another fighter will understand what he's doing.
Now, is it something that you would do, or have you done that, or are you just going to stay exactly where you are?
I began my career at welterweight. The first guy I ever fought was at welterweight. He was a Matt Farah guy.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. Hey, man, I was there for the very beginning of your... And that was funny where it was. It was at like some rec center where there was like skateboard ramps. And remember that?
Yeah.
That was back in...
Elizabeth.
Yeah, Elizabeth, New Jersey, yeah. 2003. And that was your first, very first fight. Now look at us here. How many years later? That's hysterical.
I think I paid the promoter like $200 so I can fight.
Yeah.
And there was about 75 people there. I'm like, yeah, man, this thing's a dead end. I don't know. Dude. I don't know how many of these things I can do.
I remember I was saying it the other day at the same episode where I was before your fight where I was picking you. I'm not bringing that up again, Jimmy. But I was going over that fight. I remember my first impression was my guy went out there, and I think my guy hit you with something, and you gave him a little smirk, and you blasted him. You took him down, mounted him, and beat the shit out of him. I'm like, oh, man, this guy's fucking tough. And then years later, look at this. I was there for the very beginning, and now you're the fucking champ, man. Congratulations. That's so great.
Yeah, man. And we're in the same family, you know. I'm with Ricardo and that whole crew. You know, I'm sure we'll be cross training sometime soon.
Andy, dude, you're always welcome by my place. And yeah, after fighting you, my guy didn't stay with it. He didn't stay with it. He's like, you know what, maybe this ain't for me. You gotta fight animals like this.
Are you still living in Philly where you grew up?
Yeah, Philadelphia, man. Tried the Florida thing for a year or so, couldn't really do it.
What part of Florida?
Came back home. I was in Boca Raton for about a year or two, and then I came back home finally and got. I started with Frankie, Frankie, Mark. We'd always get together right around when I was doing the Dream Tournament around 2008, 2007, and we had some good sparring sessions. We helped each other a lot when I was the Bellator champ and he was the UFC champ. So it was good to get back to that. Where, you know, we're all in the same room, all pushing each other and filming and just getting better every day. So that's where I'm at now.
Why did you choose Boca? Isn't it like all old people down there?
It was the Black Zanes were there. They had a real good team. And I went down there to work with a lot of their guys, Henry Hooft. I'm still friends with Henry Hooft and a lot of the coaches down there. I just really couldn't live there. I was trying to do my best to live there, but I'm a Philly guy by heart. I really couldn't do it.
Yeah, there's a very different mentality from Philadelphia, where I think everybody fights in Boca Raton. Everybody's just fucking old, and it's kind of creepy. I get tired of Florida after like two or three days. I have to come home.
Yeah, it's a place to visit, place to look at, place to kind of visit for a little bit, and then go back to where you live.
What kind of neighborhood in Philly did you grow up in? Because Philly is really... I can't think of many cities that have put out consistently better fighters in Philadelphia.
I grew up in a terrible neighborhood.
Did you really?
If you watch a movie Rocky, I grew up in Kensington. That's where Rocky was filmed. And when I was little, it was a good neighborhood. There was like boxing gyms on every corner and things like that. But right around when I got around 8, 9 years old or something like that, it got pretty much taken over by drugs, Section 8 housing, you know, all that stuff. So it was like, it's basically a war zone from when I was like 10 years old all the way to about when I moved out. When I had my first kid, I moved out of there. I went down there to UFC cameras. They asked me to go down there to show them where I grew up. And I asked them a number of times to not go there. And the guy insisted that we should go. So finally we go. And the minute we got out of the car, lady came running up to us in a panic and asked us like, what are we doing here? And that we shouldn't be here. And I said, I know that. I told them that a number of times. And the camera dudes were like looking at me like, I'm like, let's get this done quick, whatever you're trying to do. And then let's roll. So that's what we did.
So what were they, you were worried that you were in a drug area and they could misinterpret your reasons for being down there. You're going to get robbed or worse.
No, I don't ever mind going there. I grew up there. I don't mind. I don't have nothing for them to take. They wanted to go there with like really expensive cameras and shit. And I'm like, that ain't a good idea. I don't want to be with you guys. You're going to be walking around with cameras that are, you know, $20,000, $50,000. I'll do my own thing
right
over here with nothing. and then you can hang out, you know, real expensive shit over there. I always feel safe where I grew up, regardless of how bad it gets, but I don't feel safe going there with valuable shit.
So you, do you have to fight a lot when you were a kid going to school? Is that kind of how you got into this? Is like, you know, just walking to school, you learn how to fight?
I think the neighborhood in general, you fought. So like, there was boxing gyms on every corner, like I said. So you had to be part of a boxing gym, or like that was our, just how a kid wants to be on a soccer team or a baseball team or something like that. In Kensington, when you grow up, it was like, what boxing team were you on? Were you on Harrogate? Were you on Ramblers? Were you on Front Street? So them gyms would spar each other and fight each other. And then when you were just kind of chilling out on the block, you would run into them kids who sparred for another gym or trained at another gym. And I just remember being young, walking down the street with like four boxing gloves and knocking for friends, you know, and being like, hey, you want to fight? And then some would say no. And then you got a couple kids would always say, yeah. So, just fighting was like our baseball, you know, that's what we did.
It was just what you did. And you became a pro, I think. What were you training for, like 8 months or 9 months, and you became a pro?
The minute I came out of high school wrestling, I was getting a bunch of street fights and dumb shit. And I finally said, I don't want to try that, you know, because UFC started to make a little thing. I said, I want to try that. So I trained for about 8 months, and I asked the guy I was training with, Stephen Haig. I think Matt might know him. I said,
of course,
hey, can we do a fight? And Steve said, yeah, let's do a fight. And that was it.
Oh, okay. And you managed yourself for 4 years. I was watching one of your old fights, and I think it was might have been Shamrock that was talking about you managing yourself for 4 years, which probably is the most amazing thing I heard about any fighter in a long time, is that you were able to pull that off for 4 years and continue.
I managed myself all the way to making about $30,000 per fight. I think when I signed with Bodog, they decided to pay me $30,000 per fight. And then they started giving me contracts that were really sick, and they had TV stuff in them. So that's when I got a manager. Before they were willing to pay me that amount, I was just doing everything through ticket sales and, you know, the normal way that you come up. But the minute I was able to do it for a living and quit my job, and the contracts got really like past 3 pages long, I decided to get someone to look over for me.
Oh, okay. What were you like? What would an average fight pay before the 30,000 fight, when you were doing ticket sales and stuff like that? Like, what was considered a decent night?
It was really negotiated upon tickets. You didn't really get a winning show. You know, Matt, it was Atlantic City days with Lou Neglia and the other promoters. They basically gauged what you got paid off your tickets. And at the time, I was dealing with Russians for MFC and before it became Bodog. And I just negotiated. I said I wanted 30 to 40% of my ticket sales. And I said, you don't have to pay me winning show. I don't care about winning show. So at that point, I was bringing between 500 and 800 people down to Atlantic City to watch fights. So I would get, I'd sell tickets for $50 a piece, and then I get like $30. I get 30%. Of my total. So I would bring them a book bag full of cash. They would give me my cut, and then I'd end up selling like 500 t-shirts or something. So I always got paid well at a very early point in my career, only because I had a huge following from Philadelphia watching me in Atlantic City.
But you also hustled and sold your own stuff and kind of got involved in the business end of it. Like, a lot of fighters probably never have that and have no idea how to make money or how the money is calculated, because they don't do any of it themselves from the beginning.
Yeah. Early in my career, I realized that I could have zero talent. If I sold a lot of tickets, promoters would want me to fight. So I realized that the amount of tickets I sold correlated to the amount of how much people wanted me to fight. So I was real with myself. I wasn't great at fighting. I was good at fighting, but I brought a lot of people to the show with me, and promoters wanted that.
What do you think would have happened to you if you didn't fight? Were you going down a bad road, or do you think that, was there another kind of career that you were looking at, or did you have no idea at that point?
I was doing concrete work every day. I did masonry work. I was a finisher, and I did that for about 4 or 5 years and trained after work. And I did that for about 4 or 5 years straight where I was working concrete and then training. So I kind of used concrete for strength conditioning. And then I'd head to boxing and I had the jiu-jitsu at night. So
Jesus,
there was a time in my life where I was just like falling asleep while I was driving, because I was trying to chase the dream of being a fighter, but I was also needed to be real and get bills paid. So, every day I'd go to work, I'd be like, man, I hope this fighting shit works out because I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do concrete for a living. And I think my main drive was that I didn't want to work. I didn't want to work a job for a living.
Yeah, office, yeah.
Yeah, just like, no way I'm doing concrete work, you know? That's crazy. I thought more of myself. So I'd go to work every day and just be like, I could spend these 8 hours training. No one would fuck with me. No one could beat me if I could just spend this time that I'm working just training. And little by little, it became more of a reality when we got paid more.
What was the first? Do you remember the first thing you treated yourself to when you made real money? Like the first thing you're like, fuck it, I have to go out and have that, even though it's probably more than I should pay for it.
Nah, I'm cheap, man.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm cheap. I'm from humble beginnings, so I don't buy cars, I don't buy jewelry, I don't buy myself clothes. If I have anything nice on, it's because my wife bought it for me, probably.
same thing with me with that. That's funny.
I'm just not that kind of dude, and I'm not going to be that kind of champion. That's for sure. I'm pretty frugal. I don't want to be broke again.
Yeah.
I was broke, and I don't ever want to be broke again. So. I invest in real estate. I kind of try to read as much as I can and do the right things with the money I got because I don't want to fuck it up.
That's so smart, dude. That's really smart because a lot of my mother was good with money. My father's like me. We're both a couple of asses with money, but my mother was responsible. But guys that think it's never going to run out, it's like, and plus if you fucking save your money and you never have to do anything you don't want to do to make money because you haven't wasted it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like the Bellator thing. Like a lot of guys, we make a lot of money, we spend it all. When I got sat with Bellator for a year and a half, I invested in a property, and if I didn't do that, I sold that property during that downtime, and that was able to keep me afloat and keep bills paid and keep everyone comfortable while I went through that. So I learned a valuable lesson there. You know, I was lucky that I didn't spend that on a car or something stupid because it got me through a really tough time. So I continue to do that because this sport, you know, all we have is today and who knows if tomorrow is going to be the same. It's really uncertain. So you can't fuck up your money because it might be the last shot. So just try to make the right moves as good as I can.
And it's different. It's different when you're like it's not just you, when you got a family. I know you're a family man. Like when I used to live at my school when I opened up my school and not really give too much of a shit. I was living the dream, teaching jiu-jitsu, fighting. But then once you have kids, how many kids you got?
I got 4.
Oh, shit, got, man. You got past me.
Eddie, Anthony, Alistair, and Aniston.
Oh.
11, 8, 6, and a year and a half.
Oh, I gotta ask you, Alistair is such a cool name. You know, like, I think, who did you name Alistair after? Now, of course, you think Alistair Crowley, but there must have been someone else you named Alistair after.
No, when I went back to Japan in 2008, I seen Alistair Overeem was fighting on our cards. And I thought to myself, that is the coolest name, and I'm never going to see this guy again. I'm never going to deal with him again. So I'll name my kid that, and I'll be able to just say, yeah, I came up with the name. Like, you know, Alistair was born, and then next thing you know, I was in a training camp with Alistair Overeem, and it is spelled differently. It's not spelled the same as Alistair, but I really didn't want to explain to Alistair Overeem that, you know, his head's big enough. I didn't want to tell him.
Your kid's
I named my kid after him.
Well, as long as you enjoy some of the money, you got to enjoy it a little bit. Like, you know, Mick Foley's a buddy of mine. And I love Mick, but Mick was so crazy with money. Like, he was literally sleeping on fans' couches. I would talk to Mick, and he'd be like, I slept on fans. Like, why the fuck would you? You're out of your mind. He would just go crash at their houses.
If I have a voice with the money, we spend a lot on, like, just kind of doing shit, you know? Like, doing anything with six people is expensive. Right. You know what I mean? Like, anything. But if we spend a lot on anything, it's just doing stuff with our family. Me and my wife are going somewhere. We don't really think about sort of what we're spending when we go do something. And we're pretty spontaneous, so we'll pop out and do a vacation, and we might drop, you know, thousands of dollars. But I don't see that as a loss, as long as everybody's having a good time. So
right.
That'd be the only way that I really splurge. Otherwise, I'm pretty tight. I'm gonna be honest with you.
Well, that's great, man. And you're an awesome fighter, and I'm really happy. I've been wanting to get you on for a while, and I'm happy that we could get you today. And you know, congratulations, man. That was an extraordinarily impressive win.
Yeah, man. Congrats. And thanks for coming on with us, Eddie.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it, guys.
All right. The great Eddie Alvarez. Thank you, buddy.
All right.
Good dude, huh?
Yeah, man. Just a regular. That's a Philly guy.
Yeah, what a nice, I mean,
down to earth, bullshit.
I'm catching up to him with kids. I got three, but I know what he's talking about.
That Alistair, you know, it's funny. I thought of Alistair Overeem when he said that, and Crowley, but I didn't think, like, you know.
That is funny.
And it turned out it was Alistair Overeem. Can you believe that fucking Brock pay? I just kind of mentioned that casually.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of money.
Well, hey, man, he's got that following, you know. They'll follow him over from the WWE. He's got that it factor.
Not the UFC doesn't have that kind of money, considering.
Huh?
Not that they don't have it, considering there was a little... This is how dumb people are on Twitter. Now, I know I'm breaking ground by saying people can be fucking dumb on Twitter.
Oh, really?
UFC is sold for $4 billion.
Wow.
I go on Twitter and say, the UFC has been sold for $4 billion, and I got 7% of the company when I signed on to do the podcast, so that's kind of cool. Now, 98% of the people who aren't assholes know that I'm kidding, but there were people, without irony, who are going, dude, that's pretty, that is good. Like, really? Do you think that'd be my reaction if I just made $280 million or whatever it was? You think I'd still be doing this shitty podcast? No offense. I'd set fire to this building.
I'd set $280 fire.
Fucking million.
Kick me in the nuts on the way out. With you guys in it.
It's funny. $4 billion. And then people were like, what do you think Dana lied to you for? First of all, Dana kind of beat around the bush. It was an awkward, when you have a $4 billion, I'm not upset at that, $4 billion deal on the table, you have to handle it a certain way. Anyone that thinks that if two of their friends on a podcast ask them a question with $4 billion at stake.
Yeah. I'm not really insulted.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
But he did say, like, you know, and this was what kind of told me that there might be a sale. Because it was, and even if it had, like, your employees would have nothing to worry about. It's like, he wouldn't have said that if there wasn't something happening. And I hear he is staying, and that's what a lot of people were worried about. Lorenzo was stepping down, and that was part of the deal. And William Morris is kind of leading a bunch of different companies that are tied in. It's like a group effort, I guess, to buy the UFC. But I don't blame the Fertittas. I mean, a $4 billion... You know, a sale on, they paid $2 million. They sunk in, like, what, 40? So it was $42 million. I mean Jesus, hey,
man.
Christ.
I talked to Dana yesterday, and he was saying this shit's going to the next level, man. Just the next level. So that's exciting.
Yeah, he's bonusing podcast people. It's just one of those things. He's crediting us in a weird way with just having been the thing that got it pushed. But he's staying for a while, I hope.
Yeah, well, no, he's saying he's busier than ever, and it's, you know, business as usual, man. It's nothing. It's nothing but a good thing. It's nothing but bigger things coming. So, yay, that's exciting. I'm excited about it, and I'm excited that we still got a job.
That's all I care about.
Me too. At the end of the day, not to be a selfish prick, I got three kids. I'm like, wait, there's a sale? What? But it's all good, man.
Yeah, I mean, I have no kids, yeah. But I do have sexual bills to pay. So, you know, we all have our money for what we what we need. Hey, look, Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans proudly supports UFC Unfiltered. And we do appreciate that, guys.
Thank you very much.
Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. Fast, powerful, and completely online, Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. With Rocket Mortgage, you can easily share your bank statements, your pay stubs, the touch of a button, helping you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's been tailored to your unique financial situation. Rocket Mortgage, you can do all this on your phone or tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today, quickenloans.com/unfiltered. It is an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. But and I can tell you from experience, man, I wish I had had this a few months ago when I was going through a mortgage, because I did get my mortgage, but not with the first bank I applied for, and it was horrendous. So if I ever have to do it again, at least I know who I'm going to do it with.
Yes.
You know, but they're sponsors, and we do appreciate that. I think it's their first week on the program, or second week on the program. Yes. What do I know? I'm just a sweet boy. let's see here. What's up, a little John Jones, manager, Malky, how do you say his last name? Kawa or Kawa?
I believe it's Kawa.
All right, good. I got on the first shot. He said that Jones missed out on an eight-figure payday. We're talking about the UFC's finances. Now, eight figures doesn't make much. It all depends on where you put the decimal point. You know, I've lied to women. Eight figures, you know, but I, you know, it's actually, you know, a couple of thousand.
I'll tell you, we saw John Jones that night when we were going to that cafe.
We didn't talk about this, did we?
No. We saw him, and, you know, he's just super nice and depressed. Not depressed. He was sad about the whole thing, and... And, you know, he's sticking to his guns on what's up, on what's going on. And he's just, I felt bad for the guy. I really did. Like, he just seemed so depressed.
We were walking around the area. We were staying at the Vidara, which is a weird name, a V and a D. I mean, believe me, God knows why those letters are together in my life, but I don't know why you'd put them in a hotel. But we're walking around, and again, we didn't talk about this. I forget what we've talked about on air and off. But I'm with Din Thomas and Matt, and we're going through the area. And we see Alistair Overeem, who I really would like to speak to and get a photo with, because I like him and eventually interview him. But he doesn't seem like he's down. He's not ever too happy. He's met me with people, but he always kind of looks at me.
Looks like a fucking James Bond villain.
He looks like a Bond villain, but he looks at me the way you would look at a man, like if I walked up and my dick was just hanging out. Like the weird look, like he's not.
His eyes widen?
No, he looks cautious and uncomfortable. Like, he stares at me cautiously.
Are you smiling at him, though?
No, but I'll say things like, hey, and he's like, he'll just nod and kind of and look away uncomfortably. Like,
that might just be him.
Creeper, get away from me. So anyway, we see him. He's a very imposing figure. We see him in the aria. And Matt and Din say hello to him, and I nod, and he just ignores me. And then we're going to the restroom a few minutes later, and we see him talking in the lobby. And he's talking to, I say to Matt, is that fucking Jones? Like, you just can't believe that on the Saturday.
You didn't think it was. And I'm like, no, that's him.
But because it's after the fights on the Saturday, and there's John in a Vegas lobby, and he's not being mobbed. He has the beard, and he's talking to Alistair Overeem. Obviously, they both train at, you know, Jackson Wink. But still, to see them talking there without 500 people around them was bizarre. So we go to the bathroom, and we come out, and it's indeed them. So I'm like, fuck it. I mean, John looks at me and I look at him and he kind of nods. And I know he's talking to Alistair, but I'm going to go over and say hello because I like John. So I walk over and I just kind of give him the, hey. And Alistair looks at me and I guess he thinks, oh, good. Blinking creeper boy is back. Dick hanging out. I'm leaving. So he walks away. He literally walked away like I was walking over with a tray of shit. But would anybody care for a nibble of this?
Yeah, you got him out of there.
I couldn't have chased him away faster with a tray of shit. And, John chatted with us. It was then by that time, Din and Matt came over. And he did seem down, but he seemed like he's like hoping it's only going to be a six-month thing. And, you know, the highlight, of course, self-centered ass that I am, was that he listens to the podcast.
And he said, we have great chemistry.
He goes, man, you guys sound good. You got great chemistry. It was really nice to hear.
The guy's going through the toughest time ever. We're giving ourselves, we're just taking a compliment he gave us and running with it.
That's exactly what you do. You take that. We all take everything how it relates to us. But, you know, I hope that he does only get a 6 month thing.
Yeah, man. I just hope that goes as smoothly as possible after everything comes back and yada, yada.
But I hope so.
Hey, let me tell you, I don't know if I was save this for later. I wanted to talk to you about the latest Dana White looking for a fight, and you know, the one you saw it with me. You watched it with me backstage with Dana.
We yes, I
on
did.
His iPad, and I got to delve.
Yep. Delve. No, I get to delve
into your world of stand-up comedy.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Thank you. I should never second guess. Why do I always second guess myself on this?
There's a good reason.
Exactly. This fact. Yeah, you think so? But oh man, Jimmy, the Laugh Factory. For people who don't know what I'm talking about, the latest episode 7 of Dana White looking for a fight on YouTube or UFC Fight Pass. It is we do stand up comedy in LA. That's because we do, you know, for people who don't know about the show, we go around looking for upcoming talent for the UFC or the Ultimate Fighter at these smaller MMA events around the country. And while we're there, we do some wacky shit. You know, I rode a bull. I did dog sledding. I'm having some great life experiences on the show, Jimmy. Really, I really am. I'm enjoying myself. And now my buddy Dean Thomas is on the show with me, and we have a blast, you know, me, him, and Dana. So we had to go to the famous Laugh Factory. Did you ever do the Laugh Factory?
I have. It's never a great room for me because the energy is so positive and fun. And I'm a fucking funeral and dirge.
Man, it's just so compact. You're funny. But it was, and I'm telling you, this is coming from a guy that used to fight in a cage for a living and rode a fucking bull. It was one of the scariest things I ever did. And when I got off that stage, it felt like I want to fight. And yeah. You see it on there. What I like about the episode is they film right before we go out. You catch like the, it's like, you see what it's like. The behind the scenes shit's what's always fascinating no matter what I watch. And then after I get off the stage, I'm hugging my Brian Kalin. You know Brian Kalin?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I know him for like 20 years. He trained over at the Henzo Gracie's Academy back when he was on Mad TV. Like, seriously.
Oh my God, I forgot he was on there.
Oh, dude, that was like, literally, I was like 21 and I met Brian back in the city and we became friends then. So he was a familiar face and he was very comforting there. So I just gave him a bear hug and I'm kissing him and I'm telling him how happy I am. They captured all of it, but what an experience, man. I give you a lot of credit, man, because I played that one. Look, I'm a big comedian now, but I had that one. I had my set, but I did that thing on there and, oh man, dude, it's fucking orgasmic when you do well. I mean, I did well. It was a UFC crowd. I don't want to, you know, not the second Jimmy Norton coming out, the second coming of Jimmy Norton, but I was fucking, what an experience, Jimmy.
You know, I remember we talked about it before, and it was really funny to watch the episode because Dana was very funny. He's talking, he goes, my fucking arms are sweating. And I really, it was so funny to see him. I don't think I've ever seen Dana White nervous before, other than the time I accidentally bled around him. He's always pretty comfortable and unfazable. Man. And he said he was really, really scared. And to see you guys nervous about doing something was interesting. And I forget as a comic, because it's what I do for 26 years, that to people who don't do it, I mean, I get nervous sometimes. Of course I do.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not a paralyzing fear because I know what to expect. But I forget guys who don't do it, what it's like for them. And all three of you guys who are really guys, like Dana fought before he was a boxer and he did some boxing promoting. He's a guy that's been in the fighting trenches, you and Din both. To see you guys nervous about something was very interesting. And I'm not being polite and towing the company line, but you guys were all funny. And who is it, Tony Hinchcliffe? Is that how you say his last name? Like, yes. Tony's a funny fucking dude, man. And he helped Dana write stuff. And did Brian help you?
Nobody helped me.
Or did Brian help him?
Nobody helped me at
Brian
all.
Brian was there.
And Brian was there to hang out. Nobody wrote a thing for me.
Nick Swartzen was the coach.
Nick Swartzen's awesome.
Yeah.
Brian Kalin's awesome. No, everybody was very supportive. David Spade was there. I met him. Very nice. And man, I'm really proud of it. Listen, I'm never doing it again. It's not a second career for me. I did it once. It's like somebody trying an MMA fight out, getting in there, getting a nice quick finish or a nice fucking performance, and then saying, all right, good, I'm hanging up my gloves. That's me. I threw down the mic. I'm done. But wow. But Jimmy, what a life experience, man. Sold out crowd at the Laugh Factory. Again, it was a UFC crowd, so I know I had that going for me.
You still could have bombed, man. I know. You could have eaten your dick, and you did great. I watched it. You were funny, man.
Thanks, man.
Matt was genuinely funny, and all the guys did well. And it was, everyone knows you're not stand-up, but I'm really being honest, you were all funny, and Matt comes out and he's just such a real fucking guy. Like the guy you see listening on the podcast, this is who Matt's, you know, hey, just talking. Hey, fuck, what about that cunt Adrian? Yeah. That's my favorite line from anything I've seen in 10 years.
And it's funny because I had that little, I don't want to say bit, but I guess it is a bit, but I've done it before. I did it once on Opie and Jim Norton, and I did it once, a little version of it, nothing too big. But I kind of, that's where it was like, I was kind of hashing it out. So I'm like, man, what do I do when I go? And I don't know. I don't want to go up there and tell jokes. Yeah, I don't know jokes. So I went up there and I just did that little bit with, you know, basically how Adrian started off good and became a fucking cunt.
It was, but it was very funny. And Dana was up there doing like political jokes too.
Oh no, yeah, Dana was and left for nothing. The guy wrote the material for him, but you still got to go up there and deliver it. He was shitting himself.
And he didn't have to confess that. That was the funny part, where that he actually did confess it and he didn't have to.
I'm happy he confessed it.
Sure.
I really am, you know? And it's funny because he wanted to watch it with me for some reason. He goes, "Oh, I got the laptop. Get to the arena early. I want to watch it with you." So I'm like, "Oh, that's nice. Dana wants to watch the show with me." But that's why he wanted to see mine and Dean's face when he let the cat out of the bag that he had help. So.
Am I saying his name wrong? I'm saying Din Thomas.
It's not listen. It's not his fault. His parents couldn't spell. It's D-I-N, but he's Dean.
It like is regular okay. Dean. This is why
everybody calls. Don't listen. It's his parents' fault, but they just can't spell. But first of all, how great is Dean Thomas?
He's awesome. He was very funny on stage too. He's talking about his first orgasm or whatever. He was kind of relating it to his personal life.
And I don't think he. How about? I don't think that guy was fucking nervous. He does improv groups and this and improv and. Yeah, that guy's definitely going to be headed to Hollywood, Dean Thomas.
Here's why I called him Dean, because I know it's Dean, because I hung out with him. We had a great time, and he said I was embarrassing him. He does a radio show in Florida or something?
Yeah, he does Morning Wood with Tyron Woodley.
And we have a buddy named Eric, who's a mutual friend. E-Rock was on Opie and Anthony, and now he's still with us in the morning. And stupid E-Rock, by the way, said Dean Thomas, who said I was embarrassing him, because I was referring to him as my fiancé. Like, we were doing something... And I'm waiting for some guy, and he's coming out of the bathroom. I'm like, "Yeah, someone asked me something." I'm like, "Yeah, well, my fiance's right here." And he walks out. He didn't know how to take it. And in this day and age, nobody questions it.
Yeah, exactly.
So he and I are on the elevator one time. And it's just me and him going up, and there's a drunk guy. And the guy's so drunk, he's going, and he's spitting on the floor. You know when your mouth gets filled with water when you're going to puke?
Can't blame the guy.
The guy was so drunk. So I get off the elevator. And the door's about to close, and it's just him and Dean on the elevator now. And I just look at Dean, I'm like, "I love you." And the door's closed. So I leave the two of them. So I was embarrassing him. So stupid E-Rock comes to me, and he goes, "Din Thomas, who works with my friend." And he said Din like 10 times. And I'm like, "Oh no, have I been saying this poor fucker's name wrong?" E-Rock is so dumb. I love E-Rock, but this, I can't even go into it. We interviewed Robert F. Kennedy Jr. yesterday, RFK's son. And after the show, we're talking about the Kennedy assassination. We had to come back on for a minute to wrap up the show.
Yeah.
But this is RFK's son talking about his assassinated uncle, JFK.
Yeah.
And he's actually a conspiracy theory guy. And we're talking. And instead of just playing, we were going to be coming back in a minute. But instead of just telling the producer, play a bit or something, these guys are going to be in a minute. He's talking to us about the assassination. And Eric walks in and goes, "1 minute!" Meaning we have to come back. And then RFK goes, "Oh, okay, guys." And then he walks out. He walks out. If you know Eric Nagel, he's a good boy, and I love him, but he's not a bright bulb. 1 minute. I was stunned.
Oh, you know, speaking of being stunned, really, really, really quick.
So
Jimmy,
he fucked up two things yesterday. It's Dean Thomas, Eric.
Hey, Jimmy, what about where me and you were walking back with our pathetic bladders because we both have to piss every fight.
It's the worst.
And we're walking back. And I've seen Jim get tackled, straight up tackled. His water goes flying. And it was CM Punk. And it was, I got a picture of you guys, of him hugging you right after. Dude, you look mortified, your face, when I saw you on the floor.
Well, can I explain what happened there? Because here's what happened. CM Punk, who is a buddy of mine, off the air, and you know, before he came on, he texted me like, "I love CM." And he comes up to me. And I'm walking, the day before I had been with Dine Thomas, and Dean and I were walking, and he's talking to some guy right after this fiance incident. And the guy's going, "Hey, man," and the guy's calling Dean out on something kind of playfully. And then I'm like, "Come on, let's go, man." And the guy goes, "Hey, man, I know you're waiting to get out of here." And the guy just kind of gives me like a little gentle pat on the cheek. And I'm like, "Oh, him and Dean are buddies." So me and Dean are walking, and Dean goes, "Hey, fucking fight fans of the world." I'm like, "What?" Like, he didn't even know the guy. So some strange fight fan just kind of touched my neck gently, like in an alpha way. But I thought it was like his friend just joking with.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm like, "What the fuck?" So the next day, CM Punk, as we're backstage, grabs me. And I don't recognize him because he has a beard.
It was fast.
So I'm thinking, this is another fucking touchy fight fan. And he grabs me. And then he's leaning me back. And my back gently hits this metal bar. It didn't hurt. Yeah. But then I'm like, okay. And he puts me on my back on the floor. And I'm did this cocksucker just put me on the floor? But
that, you're making it sound slow. It was fast.
Yeah,
fast. It was like he, boom, and it's like he tackled. It looked like he tackled you, but he let you down gentle enough where you didn't get hurt or anything. But I saw it was him. I saw it was him.
I didn't know. I'm like, this fucking, this cocksucker fight fan. And then we shake hands because Matt's laughing. I'm trying to be good-natured.
I'm gonna tweet the picture. The pic I took of you guys right immediately afterwards of him hugging you and just letting you know it's okay.
He
and
said
you
it was,
still look more.
But then he said it was CM, and I'm like, oh my God. And then I really hugged him. I'm like, I didn't recognize you. So he probably thought like, wow, Norton lost his sense of humor.
Yeah.
I just didn't recognize him with the beard. I'm so glad I didn't hit him because, A, I would have gotten fired from this podcast and gotten the shit beaten out of me by CM Punk.
I
almost lashed out physically just thinking it was a fight fan. I'm so happy I didn't do
people,
that.
People, I'm talking to the audience. People, if I forget, just remind me to tweet that pic because I'll forget by the time I get out of here. But of him hugging Jimmy and letting him know it's okay right afterwards, because I tried to capture some of it, but I just missed when you got up and you guys are holding each other and you look mortified.
I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know it was him. I was happy that I got to finally got to meet Stipe Miocic. I'd been wanting to meet him and say hello.
What a great guy Stipe is. What a nice guy, huh?
Yeah, we chatted for a bit and him and his beautiful wife were back there talking. And then Conor McGregor goes back. And I met Conor the night before. I sat next to him and, can we take a picture? And he was very nice. And then my camera was malfunctioning. I'm like, because Dana had said hello to him. And I'm like, can we do it again? And he was like, all right. You know, it was fucking slightly annoyed. I think I saw press conference Conor for a second. He wanted to smack me. But he was cool. So we see him the next night. And Reed Harris introduces us. And Conor remembered me, as you will remember a fucking creep who sat next to you. You know, we met last night. And so we said hello, and I told him I'd love to get you on the podcast, and he was like, okay, you know, we'll try it. And then I asked Stipe, I'm like, do you know Conor? And he's like, no, I haven't. I'm like, well, come over. And I'm like, I'm going to introduce him. I met Conor once for a half second the night after annoying the poor fucker for a picture, and now I'm like his agent introducing him to the heavyweight champ, and Stipe was like almost embarrassed for me. He's like, no, I'll do it myself. Yeah. And then I'm like his mom. I'm like Mrs. Miocic. I'm snapping photos. There's my boy talking to Conor.
He's right there. Do you want to meet him? He's right there.
But of course they talked because they had something in common. You know, they're both men who fight for a living, and I'm fucking, you know, just a stupid asshole snapping photos that didn't come out well. But we also have another guest today, which I'm also... Should I do the read before or after our guest? Well, I'm going to do the read right now.
And they keep everybody in suspense on who's coming out.
I'm not even going to mention her championship name. Hey, by the way, I do want to thank, honestly, Harry's for supporting the podcast. Now, Harry's makes its own high-quality razors. They really cut out the middleman, and they ship them directly to you for half the price of leading brands. It's a good shave at a good price. I would have written the copy and said good shave at a great price or great shave it, because it is a great price. And by cutting out the middleman, they mean, why is it when I buy a high-end razor, I have to go there and get a security team to walk over with a key? It's like, this is not Fort Knox. And then it makes that loud when you pull that thing aside. You know that little piece of plastic? Like, they hide the razors like they're the aliens. Remember in Independence Day when they go and they look at the alien, they're all behind that plexiglass?
Yeah.
That's what these stupid razors are like in the pharmacy. Could you open this? Okay. And then they pull out the razor. This is simple. You get the best of both with Harry's Good Shave, the good shave and the good price. Harry's makes just one razor with all you need for a close, comfortable shave. 5 German-crafted blades, flex hinge, and lubricating strip. Quality is guaranteed. It's a full refund if you're not happy. And as you know, I love when companies do that. Stop compromising on your shave. There's nothing worse than a lousy shave. You look stupid and you feel stupider. For far too many long, you've either paid too much for a comfortable shave or you're going to settle for a low price but low quality razor. Harry's offers something you've never had before, a great shave at a fair price. Look, you want to save money and go with a dirt cheap razor? Fine. Go to the gym and take one of those pieces of garbage out of the little plastic bin. Oh, I'll save a buck.
Yeah.
And you really, your throat is cut Factory direct price has cut out the middleman. No upcharges. It's half the price of the leading brands. Harry's starter set, now this is important, it's called the Truman. The Harry and the Truman. Okay, I guess that was on purpose. I don't know. But it's a great option for new customers, and it's an amazing deal. You know what's throwing me, by the way? I know you're all listening to this, and Harry's people are probably going, he's the dumbest man on earth. No. There's, you hear this?
Yeah.
That hammering.
I don't think they're going to hear it at home. But
no, I know, but I hear it. They're building something downstairs.
It sounds like the scene from King Kong where you're going to sacrifice the chick. And all the natives are playing the drums.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
Did
it's
it sound like that? And nobody hears it. But let me tell you something. I used to get ingrown hairs. I've been using, I used a lot of high-end brand?
Yeah, high-end brand. Sure.
Okay.
Ingrown hairs was weird. But
did I say ingrown hairs?
You certainly did.
Listen, ingrown hairs, I get them like a motherfucker. And I don't get them from using these razors. And I love it. Fucking Harry's. It's great.
Look, $15, you get a razor handle, moisturizing shave cream, and three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors. Plus, there's a special offer for fans of this program. Harry's is going to give you $5 off your first purchase with promo code UFC. Go to harrys.com right now and look for the Truman Set. That's HARRYS.com. Enter code UFC. And you check out to get $5 off. You're going to help support the show. What is that, 10 bucks? Stop compromising. Give Harry's a try today. Harry's.com, promo code UFC. Help us out and help your stupid face out. That's your wife is sick of looking at your unshaven, improperly half-shaved face. Stop it.
For the best shave of your life. Harry's.
Sick of you people. Go to Harry's.
Go to Harry's.
All right, we ready for our guest? I am very, very psyched, not only because I admire her as a fighter, and she is quickly becoming one of my favorite people to watch. So on the phone, we have the strawweight champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Thank you for joining the program.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your victory.
Congrats, Joanna.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
How did I do with your name? Did I it fairly good justice?
Yes, you are now champion, that's all.
Okay, you are a champion, and forget
it's
the last
simple.
Name.
That's what I call it.
I have a plan to retire as a champion, you know, as undefeated, so I'm good.
Do you feel, it's funny, you know, you're 12-0 now, and Ronda, I think Ronda Rousey was she 10 or 12-0, and then she lost, and it seems like it really might have put the whammy on her a little bit. Are you worried about taking a first loss or not having gotten that out of the way?
You know, we are an athlete, so when I step into the octagon, I visualize, I always want to win, you know, but in the back of my head, I have in my mind that it's a sport, you know. MMA is very beautiful, but brutal sport, you know. We can, one punch, one submission can finish the fight, we can lose the fight, you know. But before every fight, I talk to myself, and I always say, like, Joanna, go there, step into the octagon, put on great work, show them who you really are, you know. If you win, if you lose, doesn't matter, you know. Like, well, be okay with yourself, you know, with your heart, mind, and soul. That's all, you know. But the thing is, like, Ronda was very dominant in almost all of the fights, you know. I'm happy that I really had a chance to fight Valerie Letourneau for five rounds with a very good striker. Last fight with Claudia Gadea, five rounds, good grappler, good wrestler. You know, I showed to everyone that I can handle all of them, you know. So that's all, you know. And I don't think that I really want to fight in New York, and I think I will put on great performance, great fight, and I will win one more time this year.
Well, I'll tell you, Joanna, first of all, I was there first row, and let me tell you, what an amazing fight. I mean, sometimes it's even better and it's more impressive than getting that quick knockout or quick stoppage when you have to deal with a little adversity. And when she was getting those takedowns early, she looks very strong, and it looked frustrating, but yet you never let yourself looked up. You never looked upset. You always looked like you were any bit of space, any opening, you throw in an elbow, you were fighting your way back up. And usually that exhausts people. That gets people dead tired. But she ended up like getting tired first. And by that third round, what a turn of the tide. What a turn of the tide.
Like,
man.
That's the thing. Like, people think that we just want to go and win. Of course, we all want to win, but it's not about the winning or losing the fight, you know. It's all about fighting, you know, about preparing for the fight, about our lifestyle, you know. Like, because, like, you know, I don't know. It's all about competition, you know. It's all about competition, you know.
You, after your fight with Claudia, you seem to want to. You guys had some differences, and you kind of seem ready to put some of that animosity down and put it aside. But she seemed like a little less willing to do that. Do you have thoughts on why she might have taken that angle when you seemed like you wanted to bury the hatchet?
No. She said after the fight that she didn't lose to me. She lost to the condition. Come on. If you're a challenger, you must step into the octagon and do two times more than the champion, you know. She was trying to do this for two rounds. But then it was all over, you know. And I felt like, take your time, Joanna, take your time. She's getting more and more weak. Take your time. And this is what I did from the third round, you know. So I don't know what to say. I'm very happy, excited.
Do you feel like she felt that you were disrespectful to her? Do you feel like that? Or do you feel like she just wants the rivalry to continue?
I don't know. I don't know what was in her mind, you know. Like, there were lots of, like, bad blood between me and Kavya Gadeja, but like I said, before the fight, I closed everything, you know. Like, I went into the octagon with a very, like, clean head, you know what I mean, with a strong mind, without emotions. She was just my opponent, you know, that's all.
And do you have anybody in particular who you would want to fight if you fight in the Garden at 205 in November?
Everyone. All of them. I'm ready for everyone.
You'll take... What's amazing to watch about you is that you see your cardio, your striking seems to get more accurate as the fight continues. And your cardio is... I would have to say it's the best. I thought Frankie Edgar had the best cardio, but I don't think anybody keeps up the pace you do for five rounds. It's an amazing thing to watch how you are in the third and the fourth and in the fifth round. And you really, really begin to destroy people, because by then they have some kind of a gas and you don't seem to lose any steam at all.
Yeah, I'm in shape.
Well, she's right. I didn't really ask a question. I just made a dumb, boring statement, and she kind of just acknowledged it. You're right. I should shut my fat face.
No.
So what do you do for cardio? Do you just run, or you must do something else?
No, it's something else. Like, I put on work, you know. Like, you know, I remember when I was 18, you know, and my older teammates were like, yeah, you will get older. You will be more lazy. You're not gonna train that hard. You're not gonna lose weight that easy. This and that. And I was like, what the bullshit, you know? Every year I'm better and better. Every camp I'm better and better, you know? Like, when I say that I put on work, so it means that I really put on work, you know? Like, I'm really strict to myself, you know? So I'm demanding myself. Is it correct or not?
You're demanding of yourself, yeah.
Of myself, yes. So this is who I am, you know. Like, we do lots of strength conditioning training, like 2 months before the fight, for 4 weeks, you know. So then I run a lot in the forest, you know, hills, everything, you know. Like, I put on great work. The food is very important. I changed my nutritionist. I'm working with the perfecting athletes, with Michelle and Pauline. They did, those girls, those ladies did great job, amazing job. I felt different this camp. My weight cut was very easy, you know, and everything was just perfect.
Now, did you actually go to 200, or did you watch it? And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on Misha's loss to Amanda Nunes.
I was there. I was very happy that I could meet Justin Timberlake and Conor McGregor at the end of the show. But the thing is, like, I respect everyone, you know, but there's the only one, Ronda Rousey, for me, you know. I'm waiting for this girl, you know. She must be back and show to all of the people, all of the bantam female fighters, that who is the best, you know. And she will be back. And I like Ronda Rousey and Holly Holm the most. Those girls are amazing. But like I said, I'm waiting for Ronda Rousey. It's her place, you know, to be a champion.
Now let me ask you. You said you met Connor. Had you never met Connor before? Was that your first time meeting him?
Yes, I met him before, but, you know, he's a very busy person, always too many people around him. But I'm not this this kind of person who is like going and trying to be around some, you know, very famous, popular people just to, you know, show up, you know. So I always like to say hello and that's all, you know.
Well, you seem
respect to the champion.
He was at your fight, and it looked to me like he was really pulling for you, and he was yelling to you, like, to do certain things. Like, so I'm thinking, like, Conor and her must be friends, but he obviously really likes you.
Yeah, I know. It was amazing. I saw him. I saw, like, I like to, I do this for my people, you know. I do this for my fans. I do this for my country, for my religion, for myself, you know. But when I saw, like, my sister sitting in the first row, because my brother's in-law was with me in the corner because it was his birthday, so he had an amazing gift in my corner. But the thing is, like, I look into the eyes of Lorenzo, Dana, and Conor. Robbie Lawler was there, and they gave me extra power, you know, because it was a pleasure for me to fight for them, you know, that night. And when I saw them, I was just super happy, you know. And you know, I'm a pretty simple person, you know. I'm working hard. I love my family, my country, my fiance, and my friends, and that's all. I don't need anything, you know.
So you're really interested in fighting in New York, huh? Is that a big deal for you at Madison Square Garden? Is that something you really want?
Sure, I would like to fight there, but if they're not gonna put me on this card, I'm not gonna cry. I just want to fight one more time this year. I'm very happy that my hand is okay, because I was a little bit worried that it might be broken, but everything is okay. So I need just 1 week extra, and I will be back to training. Today I'm flying back to Poland in the evening because I'm still in Vegas. But next Wednesday, probably I will fly to Chicago for the card, just 3 days. So yeah, like I said, I really want to fight in New York. I think it's going to be a really big, epic show. The first show in New York at Madison Square Garden. And I don't know. I really want to fight there. There is a very big Polish community in New York. Yes. So I would like to do this for them.
Hey, Joanna, what did you say to Timberlake when you, what did you say to Justin Timberlake when you met him?
My love. That's not what I said.
Oh,
my love.
You were just kind of nervous? Were you like a big fan?
No, a little bit. No, a little bit. I just said that I don't do this so often, but I like him so much. It was really big dream. It was my dream to meet Justin Timberlake. He was in Poland 2 years ago, probably. And it was in August, my birthday. But I didn't go to the concert, to the venue, you know, and I was like, mad at myself, you know. But finally I met him, and I hope that one day he's going to sing for me, you know.
Yeah, I took a photo with him too, and I really, for you, I'm sure he was happy with me. He didn't look too thrilled because my camera wasn't working, so I had to have my arm around him longer. He just got really irritated with me.
Like, you're a little creep.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's good show.
I think I creeped him out just a little bit. So if you don't, so you're still in Vegas, and you're going to go to Chicago for what? Are you going there for the next fight?
Yes. So I fly home for 3-4 days, and then I will be back to Vegas next week.
Is that 201 in Chicago?
To US.
Sorry, which fight is in Chicago? Is that CM Punk?
Holly Holm. But there is a big Polish community as well. It's the second biggest city in the world, you know, Chicago, with the Polish people. Warsaw and then Chicago.
You want how long is your training camp? How long is a typical training camp? Like this,
you know,
last
this
one?
This camp was pretty long. I've been training 3 months, you know. You know that my hand was broken after the fight with Valerie, so I was not able to hit for 10 weeks. So, but I started training like on the end of December. Not even so, like cardio. I hit meat just with my right hand, with left hand, and other stuff. So then we've been shooting the Ultimate Fighter for 2 months. But I've been training with my coaches at Robert Reisel gym because it was in Vegas. But after that, I was back to Poland, and I've been preparing more than 3 months for this fight. You know, it was crazy. Lots of tears, blood, sweat, lots of bad moments. But I was like, just survive, girl, just survive. It's worth it. Yeah. So this is what I did.
When did you break your hand in the fight with Letourneau? What, do you know what round it was?
I don't know. It was third or fourth round, probably. Fourth round. Same with Jessica Penne.
Oh, so you broke it twice?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that. The same hand?
Yeah, the same hand. First was thumb, and then was like fifth finger.
Wow, you fighters are really amazing. I'm not a fighter. I'm just amazed how anybody fights through that. Like, I would look for any excuse to not have to go through with it. And you guys just amazing. And you're really fun to watch. You know, and I think you're going to be a bigger and bigger star in the UFC if you keep fighting, because everyone who watches you, even people who aren't as familiar with fighting, love watching you because you just don't stop attacking. I mean, even when you're ahead 4-0, the fifth round, your goal still seems to be to kick somebody through the cage.
This is how we do it, baby.
That's it.
Well, thank you so much, Joanna.
Thank you, guys.
We're tremendous fans of you, and we're happy that you won, and we really, really thank look you. Forward to thank seeing you, so you fight again. I hope you're on the New York card, okay?
Yes, I will.
All right, the great Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. I'll tell you.
She's really nice.
I'll tell you. She's nice, and she is. She's so nice, and in that cage, she's so nasty, and I mean that in such a, in the biggest compliment.
She's a killer, dude. She's a fucking killer.
She's a killer, man. She's a killer, and that was a real treat. That was one of my favorite fights of all. We went to 3 fight cards in 3 days, and that was one of my favorite because it was such an amazing fight. And like I said, it's even better sometimes when they have to fight back from like maybe losing a round or two. Like those first 2 rounds were tough for her, and she just stayed focused and just unleashed fury. So.
Rounds 3, 4, 5, and if you see the Letourneau fight, it is amazing how her foot, she found Letourneau's face, her neck. Like, she's an absolutely vicious fighter. And the fact that Gadala had her in the first couple of rounds and was really making her life miserable on the ground. And then rounds 3, 4, and 5,
the second Claudia took the foot off the gas a tiny bit, it was all Joanna. She was all over her, man, and just didn't stop. And she picked up steam by the not only did she keep that pace going by the fifth round, she was just stronger than ever. It's very impressive.
Is cardio like that? Like, again, I talk a lot about Frankie because of the pace that he keeps when he fights. Somebody who can continue to attack that way for 5 rounds.
Yes.
And I mean, it's a nonstop fucking movement.
And that's a weapon in itself, is the endurance. When Claudia is saying she didn't lose to her, she lost to conditioning. That doesn't really make sense because conditioning's a huge part of it. When I was fighting, I was never afraid of getting hurt. I was always afraid of getting tired, though.
Yeah, you said that to me, getting tired to you is
it's
scary.
True.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons people probably get tired. Again, I work out on a minimal level. I know people look at me and they go, like, Jim, you probably should fight. You're in that kind of shape. But I'm really not. You know, and the problem, if you're going to the gym, obviously you are. But if you're going without a pre-workout supplement, I mean.
What's the matter with you?
It's not going to be as effective.
Fuck no.
Try Beats.
Yes.
Oh, but you know what? I might as well do the beat read. This was just natural chatter. What the heck?
What the hell? We're going to talk Beats. Beat Elite.
You know, I was talking to this girl recently, and she said, Jim, how do you do it? And I said, honey, Beats are a nutrition goldmine. She said, really? I said, yes. They're rich in antioxidants, polyphenols, electrolytes. And then she said, what about dietary nitrates? And I said, yes, dietary nitrates. It's funny you should say that. And then we kissed and we laughed. And she said, you know, nitrates convert to nitric oxide in the body, which, as anyone who is serious in the weight room knows. And then I jumped in and said, it's the key to getting the pump you're looking for. We laughed and we hugged. And then she said, have you tried Beat Elite? And I said, honey, Beat Elite can help support healthy circulation, help promote energy, stamina, and then she said, extended exercise endurance. And we high-fived. Beetroot juice has been causing waves lately in the fitness community. Matt and I were saying this, rubbing each other's shoulders, laughing. Clinical studies have shown that 2 glasses of beetroot juice a day, they can increase stamina up to 16%. Now you can harness the power of beets without having to chug beetroot all day long. I said to this girl, would you chug beetroot? And she said, yeah, but not all day long. And I said, of course. That's what I was saying. Go to UFCBeats.com. They have a page set up for our listeners to save $20 off their intro pack, 1 canister of the Beat Elite, plus a box of the sports packs, plus free shipping on your order. Try it with your workout, and if you don't feel a difference the first time, they offer a 90-day money-back guarantee. I think you're going to be pretty surprised. You visit UFCBeats.com to check it out, and be sure to let us know what we think. We do want to know. That's UFCBeats.com. UFCBeats.com. And we thank these guys. They've been supporting the program since the beginning, and the feedback on them has been really, really amazing. And there's a 90-day money-back guarantee. There's no way a product sucks when they're giving you a 90-day money-back guarantee, because they're saying, look, we're going to guarantee you feel something while you're getting your money back.
Beat Elite.
But I think today has been a fun episode. We appreciate you guys listening.
What a good time.
It certainly has been.
I'm having fun. And it was great to talk to the champs, two champs, not just one champ.
Eddie Alvarez and Ioanni Jędrzejczyk. Thank you. They're both people that I've been dying to get on. And both great fighters. Eddie just a brand new champion, beating Rafael Dos Anjos. And of course, Ioanni remaining the champion.
Well, let me tell you, I could hardly wait till next week, because this is so much fun.
Yeah, it really is, man. I love doing this. And we thank you guys for tuning in. And again, if you want to see my dog and pony show on the road, jimnorton.com for dates. I have Columbus, Ohio coming up. I have Toronto coming up. And I also
love Toronto.
I do too, man.
I love Toronto, man.
There's a girl I've been dying to fuck in Toronto.
Oh, God.
And I have zero shot.
Nice. I don't know, man. Did she hear about your latest? Did she hear about you on UFC Unfiltered?
No, this but she Googled over. Me. Yeah. By the way, there's nothing worse. And I also have dates in Pittsburgh and Minneapolis. If you're interested, if you're not, I'll go fuck myself. I get it. Nothing worse than when a girl goes, "Hi, Jim. I Googled you. Did you really?
What's the matter with that?
It's what's right. Fucking Larry Hitler has better Google results than Jim Norton. They're terrible. My Google results.
If I was single and I was out there, I'd be like, "Yo, YouTube me, lady."
Oh, I thought you were going to say I'd fuck you.
No.
I was like, thanks, Matt. That's a confidence builder.
It's fucking disturbing. But, hey, and also, I got nothing to plug except the latest episode that I'm very proud of, a Dana White Looking for a Fight. And you see me try that stand-up comedy, me, Dean, Thomas, and Dana. And what a good time we had out there. We found a very good fighter. And what a good time.
Yes. We'll see in a few days, and thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Yeah, bye.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.